afternoon, except for those of us that are not in Eastern or Central time. It's this is Mike Vandervoort, and this is Drive Through HR. It's Monday, August 17th. We're starting out another week on the number one daytime HR drive through or blog, whatever we are. I don't know. I haven't got the pattern down. Our guest today is Heather Bussing, and I was just spending 2 minutes catching up with you. Heather, welcome to Drive Through. How are you today?
I'm great. It's really good to be here, Mike.
Thanks. Likewise. So since we had that big 2 minute prep, we're gonna talk, you know, in our new theme about failure and success and the lessons learned. And I've known you for quite a while, but we've only met a couple times in person. But I know you're a very open person, and you volunteered today to talk about a very personal topic, I think, in that you wanted to share stories about addiction and recovery, which is very serious. So I didn't get a chance to really ask you kind of where you wanted to start. So you want to lay it out for us, or you want to share? So you want to introduce yourself first, probably. So for those that may not know you.
Sure. My name is Heather Bussing. I live in California. I'm an employment lawyer. I teach, and I also write for the HR Examiner on employment law. And other sort of work-related issues. So, and I'm also turned 20 years sober this year in July. So I know something about addiction and recovery.
Yeah, from a personal
yeah.
We're also on a temporary, and this is not serious. You're also on a temporary, from what I understand, hiatus from social media. While you indulge one of your other addictions, which is book reading, right?
I love reading books. I haven't been able to totally get off Facebook because there's so many people that talk to me that way. So I haven't been posting very much, but I have to go. I still go in and check it every, you know, day or so just to make sure that nobody needs something. It's become the new email, I guess. That's kind of frightening to me.
it's even more than email. I reached out to somebody about a possible referral on some work, and that was the first place I went to contact them, because it's easier to get a hold of him there than it is, via email or phone. So in some ways it's almost like, you know, texting and just another part of the fabric of our communication, which is a little scary. But so before we jump into the really serious topic, Heather, you do give out like truly some of the greatest book recommendations. I love it when you post lists and stuff, because I always find something there that is magical. I'm thinking actually of, is it Mr. Penumbra's Bookstore? That one? That,
yeah, 24-hour bookstore. Oh, God, that was so good.
Yeah, I mean, like Heather finds books that are not you know, necessarily on the New York Times bestseller list, but that are extraordinary, written by extraordinary people. So if you're at all interested in reading, especially fiction, check out some of Heather's recommendations that come up from time to time on Twitter and Facebook. It's really cool. So Heather, I like you said, 20 years sober. That's actually an amazing. To be 20 years of anything. I've never even worked somewhere for 20 years. So
I know, right?
Thing to
I'm
do
working,
something.
I'm working toward a 20-year relationship, but I'm only 10 into that.
I did, but I'm about
to get the longest ever.
I did do that once, and then it changed and went the way of history. But
people change.
Yeah, they do. I don't know, you know, like, do you want to just kind of start with where you were, or, you know, we're learning on this new theme.
Sure.
On the show. I'm not sure how to throw out an easy question. You used to have a lot of issues with chemicals and substance abuse from what I,
all the things. So I started out at 14 with eating disorders. Anorexia, and then I started smoking weed. And so the anorexia progressed to bulimia fairly quickly because of the munchies. so I continued with that and you know, did some other things along the way. And I really didn't start drinking until my early 20s. And you know, part of it was I went and got treatment for the eating disorders. And I'm 53 years old, and so they didn't even know what those were at the time.
Right.
And so, you know, they gave me some biofeedback, which was sort of the, you know, late 70s, early 80s answer to everything. And within 6 months, I wasn't, you know, I had moved past the eating disorders, but I was, you know, drinking and smoking. And I never drank politely. I mean, I did not have a drink. I had as many drinks as I could and still got home, you know? So, and sometimes I didn't even make it home, but yeah, I had blackouts, and I, you know, started changing my behavior. So I really liked red wine, but the problem with red wine is that when you got drunk and spilled it, it stained things. So that was really inconvenient. And so, you know, by the end, I was drinking a lot of white wine and a lot of scotch because, well, liquor's quicker. And isolating. And the goal was never for me to have a good time. The, you know, what I was trying to do was silence the voices in my head and change the way I felt. And so, you know, I see a lot of people in our industry. I see a lot of people in the law. Lawyers have one of the highest rates of addiction of any professional population. And probably road warriors would be right up there too. and so, you know, I see it everywhere still. And it's people trying to change the way they feel. And I don't blame them for a second. I do not blame them for a second. That's what we do with work. It's what we do with Facebook. It's what we do with television. So I really believe that we are a culture of addicts, and that fundamentally we're all just trying to feel less lonely and less scared and to not feel so anxious and alone.
Yeah. I you know, definitely the road warrior thing. I mean, certainly the culture of conferences is, and ones I run and the ones I go to are no different. People go there because they want to learn stuff, but there's also a fantastic social element that can really lead to a lot of other issues into the evening.
Right. Right. Yeah. So anyway, you know, when you guys called and said, we're dealing with failure, you know, what is an area in your life where you have had to cope with failure? So that would be a classic thing that people would think, oh my God, addiction, recovery, alcoholism, that's big failure. And the truth is that it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
The recovery part or the entire part?
Well, but I couldn't have the recovery without the addiction.
Right.
And that's the thing. So when I was finally ready to face who I am and give up trying to be perfect and give up trying to look good and give up trying to be the best at everything and give up trying to do everything for everyone, and to just look at little old me with all my quirks and foibles and find a way to live in my own skin, everything became possible.
So let's back up for a minute. So you started with food issues. I don't know the technical term for anorexia and bulimia, dietary issues.
Eating disorders.
disorders. I do know it. I just can't think of it because I'm older
than
you.
It's okay.
Ago. So you started that, and then you progressed into, you know, what's often labeled as the gateway drug, which is pot, and as a teenager, right? And yet, so how long did you live life? If you're 53, that means that you did that for almost as long as you've been sober, right? In some way.
Right. Yeah.
And yet you made it through law school and many other things that would indicate that you sort of had a life going on while you were dealing with all this other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I was a high functioning drunk because I really wanted to be perfect. You know, I just thought that if I could be smart enough and thin enough and pretty enough and, you know, look good enough, that everyone would like me and my life would be perfect, and then I could relax and be happy. You know, that was the setup, you know, and it's the American way, right? I mean, I'm in San Francisco with my son. We're having a little mini getaway before he has to go back to school this week. And so I don't really watch TV, but we've been watching TV, and it's just been nonstop ads. And all of the advertising is, you're not good enough. What you need is this. If only you had this, you would be happy. If only you could get all of the things outside of you arranged perfectly, then you can be content and feel good about yourself and be good about your life, and the world will be perfect. So just fix everything out there and then you'll be okay. That's the message of our culture. And it's completely backwards.
And everything is an ad now, right? I mean, I'm I'm overweight, you know, and I struggle with that. And it seems like I can't turn around anywhere without seeing something for food, you know, and,
right.
and stuff to
or
stimulate
fitness.
Like, the craving.
Yeah.
Right? Chicken sandwich right. or ice cream or potato chips or whatever it may be at the moment. And I think you're right.
Right.
So you chased, from a teenager until your mid 30s thereabouts, you chased trying to be perfect.
Right.
Is
exactly.
Kind of the short way, trying to live up to everybody else's standards, be the perfect woman, all these kind of things. You were married sometime during that time and had kids as well, right?
I didn't get married or have kids until after I got sober. I'm really glad that I was able to get sober before having babies. But that was, you know, that was an interesting time too, because I got sober. 9 months later, I got engaged. 9 months later, I got married. 9 months later, I got pregnant. 9 months later, I had a child, and I was only 3 years sober. When I had my first child at 36, I was running out of time. And I still wasn't okay. I mean, 3 years sober seemed like a lot of time to me. And it seemed like, oh my gosh, I've really, now that I'm sober, okay, I've had to give up my idea about being perfect because, well, you can't be perfect and be an alcoholic. But then I was going to fix everything else out in my life, you know? So now that I was sober, then the thing to do was to quit having this crazy life where I traveled all the time, was a trial lawyer and, you know, did all this stuff. And so I was going to like give up my high powered insanity career. And I was just going to settle down with the nice Eagle Scout from Kansas and, you know, have a baby and do cloth diapers and, you know, just make it perfect in a whole new way. So I went, you know, from one extreme to the other, which is perfect alcoholic thinking. You know, if one thing doesn't work, let's do this, the polar opposite. And of course, the problem with that is that they're almost the exact same thing. You know, it's you they're extreme.
More or less substituted one thing for another.
Exactly. And go ahead.
I was gonna say. What led to, you know, where was your epiphany? I guess, you know, you did this for a long time. You said you were high functioning. You had, you know, it sounds like you had things going on that a lot of people would consider, you know, success, travel, career, lawyer.
Yeah.
You know, the chasing that perfect. So, you know, that somewhere that something changed for you. So where was the big change?
So at one point I was working for a firm in San Francisco, and I did not drink during the day, but I would go home and drink basically a magnum of wine or a whole bunch of scotch. And I would get up very early and jump on BART and get to work at 7:30 in the morning so I could bill my 9 hours that day. And I was still drunk. I mean, I still smelled like alcohol from the night before. And so the people who worked with me noticed that I would show up at work just, you know, oozing alcohol out of my pores. And so they did an intervention and they threw me into treatment. And so I went to treatment at the Merritt Peralta Institute in Oakland, which is in a really sort of scary part of Oakland. And I did a 28-day program there. And got out, and I was clear at the end of that time that I was an alcoholic. There was absolutely no question. On the 28th day, they brought me in and they said, you know, you've done everything that we asked you to do. You were the only one who wrote in your journal every single day. You did all of the homework and you spent a lot of time really helping other people. And we see this as a problem for you because you spent 28 days focused on looking good, being perfect, and helping others, and you have not looked at yourself. We want to keep you another 28 days. And I said, no way, I'm out of here. Let me out of here. So I got out, and I stayed sober for, I don't know, a couple weeks, maybe a month. I can't really remember. But then I was off and running again, and I really thought I could control it. I really thought, you know, now that I know that I'm an alcoholic, I just have to be super careful, and maybe I can learn to have one or two drinks. And some people can do that. I was not one of them, because what I was chasing was the oblivion. And so, you know, if I started drinking, I wouldn't stop until I passed out. I just couldn't. So I spent about 3 years trying to control it and trying to figure it out, knowing that I had a problem and that someday I was going to have to quit. And so I finally, you know, got sick and tired of feeling sick and tired and asked for help and was able to find an amazing counselor. And I was brave enough that when I picked up the phone to call, I said, I have alcohol issues and I need somebody who can help me specifically with that. And so luckily I was able to find a therapist who was also in recovery. And so she was able to figure out how to get me to just be me. And it was a falling apart process. You know, I had to let go of everything that I thought about myself. So, getting a little teary here.
Sorry, take a breath.
It was an amazing thing because it turned out that underneath all of the crazy and underneath all of the trying to be who everyone wanted me to be, it was much easier to be myself because I actually was qualified to do that. and but it's a slow burn. It's a really slow process when you've spent your whole life taking cues from outside of you about who you should be and what you should say and how you should live. And so it's a very, you know, I'm still in the learning process. I'm still learning. I'm still learning who I am and how to be brave and just be myself. Mm-hmm. I don't think you ever get it. I don't think you ever go, oh, presto chango, here I am, watch out world.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't happen. You know, we are all becoming slowly and with lots of bumps along the way. You know, I have learned that when I set out to plan something and to design it and to, you know, go after it, it's really better not to hang on to that outcome too hard. To just go, okay, this is the directional arrow setting me off in the right direction. And the more I can be open and curious and see what happens, the more interesting and magical it becomes. Because I'm not as creative as the universe. So when I set out to design my life, I sell myself short over and over and over because I don't understand what's possible.
Okay. Why do you say you don't understand what's possible? You mean you don't in your own brain, you don't know what you're capable of? Is that kind of what that
means?
Well,
I don't know everything about the universe and how it operates.
Okay. So a way deeper and wider than just yourself.
My little narrow perspective, especially the more I get wrapped up in myself, is to walk through the world and judge everything according to whether it's scary or not to me, or whether it's what I want or not. And so, you know, I get really trapped in my opinions and my judgments and my stuff, you know. And the world starts to revolve around me, and then it has to get very, very small so that I can control it. Because if I let go of control, then something might happen that's unexpected, and that would be scary, or it might not be what I want. So I will do that to myself, given the opportunity, because I have this illusion of safety, right? Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think it seems like there are so many people who seem like they live perfect lives, and yet I think all of us, you know, have that voice in our head. I guess some listen a lot more. My dad is 80, early 80s, and we were talking last year or something, and he said, you know, I don't feel that much different inside, you know, than I always do. He just, you know, just my body doesn't let me do the things I used to do, you know?
Right.
I guess the brain, unless we lose ourselves in our brain, which can happen to some, which is very unfortunate, as long as we retain our function, I guess that inner person they continue to change and grow, as you said, but I guess they don't really ever grow up, maybe, because I kind of feel the same way. And it's weird sometimes to think that I'm in my, you know, in my case, 58, and I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do when I grow up, literally.
Sure. But I mean, the world is recreated every moment. You know, every moment can be new. And so why should we ever get old? I mean, our bodies wear out. We're all going to die, and that's okay. You know, I don't know what happens afterwards, and that's okay.
Right.
But you know, I don't have a choice, so I might as well just accept it and see what the world is, see what the day brings. So a lot of the getting old is, I agree with your dad. I don't ever have to get old, you know, our bodies will, our bodies will, but the spark of creative energy or life, I don't think that ever gets old. That, you know, there's the energy in the universe neither increases or decreases. It just reforms.
Yeah. So let me just do a quick reset because we've been talking. This is Drive Through HR. This is Mike Vandervoort, and our guest today is Heather Bussing, and we're having some amazing personal conversation about Heather's struggles. It's always compelling to listen to this kind of stuff, at least to me. The struggles with addiction and recovery, and kind of what it takes to grow up as a person, and you know, we're still doing that. You know, I guess, I think William, this is one of the questions I think will become our stock and trade of our new script. William asked somebody the other day, and I like the question a lot, which is, you know, if you could give advice to your younger self back when, you know, when you were 14, what advice would you give from the Heather of today?
Stop trying to protect yourself so hard. You know, I've spent my whole life being scared that somebody was going to hurt me. And it goes way back. I mean, I was adopted. And so, you know, it turns out that when you separate a baby from their mom at birth, it's really hard on everybody. But back in the 60s, before birth control, you know, it was considered, you know, a win-win situation. It's like, oh, some couple who can't have children can have a baby, and this poor, shameful person who got pregnant out of wedlock, you know, can go on with their lives. And you don't, you know, it wasn't quite that way. And so, but knowing my whole life that I was a mistake, I sort of took it to heart. It took me a very long time to realize that there is only one requirement. There's only one requirement to belong on the earth, and that's to be here. If you're here, you're good enough. If you're here, you belong. If you're here, you're in. And the rest is just all of the things that we do to ourselves and each other to try to make us feel like we belong. When everybody here belongs, we're here.
Right.
And yet the lengths that we go to develop the us v them, you know, or the I'm special, are extraordinary. They're extraordinary, and it's all an illusion.
I saw a thing the other day where somebody coined, I forget the exact term, but it was the non-conforming conformist.
Right, right. Right, I'm just like everyone else.
I'm different. I'm so different in, you know, in my beard and my skinny jeans and my plaid shirt, you know, like everyone
right.
else, or whatever, or in my case,
right.
you know, different look, but I think we all, you know, we all long for the safety of the herd or the tribe, I guess, but we also all want to, well, many
be
of us want to be special.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
yeah.
It's this constant dynamic. We have about 2 minutes left. I'm going to try to keep it to about a 30 minute call today. We added the calls up to 45, and it's not that I don't want to hear you. I actually have work I have to get back to.
Oh, good for you.
So, thanks for sharing that. I mean, this really could go on for a lot more, but I think the objective of the show is to, you know, get how to get a piece of learning or growth, right? So I think your
right.
words are wise. You also have, I know you're, you know, like you photography beyond your great book recommendations, you're a brilliant photographer from what I can see, look brilliant to me anyway. And you and John Sumser have several things going on. So why don't you kind of tell us, in closing, Heather, why don't you kind of tell us what you guys have going on with HR Examiner and some of the cool things that you do with your current partner and husband?
Yeah, well, John is amazing. John is the love of my life. And he has encouraged me to be myself and accepted me in ways that I didn't think were possible. And so we have been able to work together and to do some really interesting things. So we publish the HR Examiner, and John does these amazing radio shows that are very much like this, and we put them on the HR Examiner. And what's really cool is that they also get transcribed, so you can read the interview if you don't feel like listening to it in real time, or you're someplace where sound is not okay. And I'm loving those. I think they're really fun. And then we have a group of about 20 to 25 writers all across the industry who rotate through and write just whatever they want, whatever they're working on, whatever they're thinking. And so the quality of the ideas and the diversity of the perspectives is just wonderful. And then I write, sometimes I write on employment law, sometimes I write, you know, just because there's something on my mind. And I really have been blown away by the fact that people read it. I'm so surprised. But it's an amazing experience. And I also do a lot of photography. It started out kind of funny because actually Bill Borman is the one where I started. He invited us to True London quite a while ago. And so we flew over there, but large groups of people just completely freaked me out, and I didn't know what to do. And so I love photography, so I brought my camera, and I just started taking pictures at conferences because it gave me a role. It let me hide behind my camera. You know, I looked like part of the conference, and so everyone thought that, you know, I belonged there. And it was just a way of managing my fear and anxiety and giving me something to literally focus on. And the beautiful thing about photography is that in order to make a good picture, you have to be perfectly present because you have to see what's there instead of what you're looking at. So you have to just turn your brain down and see what you're seeing for exactly what it is. And so it was a way of sort of calming my anxiety. And now I take pictures every time I go out to a conference, and I have a really wonderful time. And so the way I'm planning to take over the universe to have all of the people that I know and like and meet and take their pictures, use a picture that I took of them as their avatar at some point on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. And there's actually quite a few who do, and I'm really touched and honored.
Well, I haven't had the privilege yet, so maybe one of these days, the next time we connect, you can shoot a headshot of me.
We will definitely do that. I would love to do that.
I'm an iPhoneographer, I guess, and I don't really claim that title. I think Charlene Lauby posts it every now and then. I just snap millions.
She's great.
She is. I snap millions of photographs with my iPhone, and every now and then one of them turns out to be, I look at it and go, damn, that's a really good picture. Not because of because of things I was looking at or the things I'm seeing, and that, you know, those moments are amazing. So when somebody can kind of plan them out and, you know, do it right, it's yet another thing that I can be jealous of, along with people who can draw straight lines and those sorts of skills that I don't have.
I throw away between 70 and 90% of the things that I take. I take a million pictures to get a few really great ones.
And I think that's probably the way it works with a lot of stuff. It just doesn't, photography, and especially with the, since we all carry a camera with us all the time now, it's not the same as it was, you know, when they used to, I don't know. Anyway, I'm thrilled that you were on. I'm thrilled I got to be the host today when you were on. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing your story of failure and success. And I'm very glad to know that Heather Bussing that I know today. I, uh, I consider you a friend and always value our ability to interact in the various ways that we do through all the media. So thanks for doing this, and thanks for being.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So with that, I guess I'm going to go ahead and wrap. I'm going to play a little music, but thanks so much, Heather. You have a great Monday and the rest of the week, and I will talk to you soon, okay?
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.